But stay curious, keep an open mind, and as always, I'm glad we get to spend some time. Welcome to Walsh Wednesday. On this week's episode of Walsh Wednesday, we speak with Jimmy McGorman and Rob Valier from the synth-pop duo Flight to London. We talk about their upcoming album, Instructions for Losing Control, and dive into their prestigious careers writing, producing, and performing with some of music's greatest legends. Thank you to our Walsh Wednesday All-Stars, all of those who have generously contributed to the Walsh Wednesday 2025 Fund Drive. You can see the list of names on screen or in the description of this episode. And of course, thank you to our Walsh Wednesday Warriors, Jim Robinson, John Newhall, Meg Boyce, and Jenna Hess. These individuals have pledged $100 or more to Walsh Wednesday for 2025, either through the GoFundMe or our Patreon. This episode of Walsh Wednesday is brought to you by Impact PR and Communications, MHA of Dutchess County, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Day Rock, Loxette Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, Dutchess Beer Distributors, Feldman, Kleiman, Collins & Sape LLP, Attorneys at Law, VBash Med Spa and the Hudson Valley Ketamine Lounge, Prime Storage, and Walsh Valuation.
Where are you?
I'm in New York. Yeah, Poughkeepsie, New York. So I'm like smack dab between Albany, the capital, and New York City. So I'm like right in between. You guys out in like the LA area? Is that where y'all at?
I'm in Phoenix today, but Jim's in LA today.
Rob's in Phoenix. I'm a little outside of Los Angeles. I moved out of town a little bit, but pretty much it's, you know, I'm like 30 minutes out.
Gotcha. Yeah. And Rob, what brings you out to Phoenix today?
Well, I go back and forth from Phoenix to
he
LA.
He lives in Phoenix,
I live in Phoenix. So
gotcha.
Tomorrow it's off to Vegas. It's it's like all over the place. But Jim and I are counting the minutes until we're together in LA on Saturday?
Yeah. By the way, Rob,
we got some writing to do.
Say hello to my little friend.
Moog
just sent us this model mini Moog here. If I
really?
Leave, I think the camera follows me.
There you go. So I got a 1972 version of that, which doesn't look as spit polished as that one does.
I didn't even plug it in. I just put it up there this morning because I was excited. So yeah.
Oh,
do you play any instrument?
Yeah, I'm a musician in my own right as well. I studied at the College of St. Rose music industry, singer, songwriter, producer in my own right.
Very oh, great. Good. So we'll have a good conversation then.
Oh, more than likely. I'm excited about this. I even have a couple of fun questions I like to do when I'm working with bands, duos, collaborations.
Let's go.
Who's most likely to questions? So pitch you guys against each other.
Oh,
you know what's funny?
I like this.
Yeah, I like this. We did an interview a couple days ago. This girl asked us some interesting questions that we didn't even know about each other, which was kind of, I mean, Jim and I, we've known each other for a long time.
It was good. Yeah, it was
really
surprising.
Good.
Yeah, it was surprising.
Wow.
To learn a couple things. Yeah, it was good.
That's funny.
We live in different states now, but, you know, we have a lot in common. But then there's like these other lives that we have, you know, kind of when we're not in the same room together. So it's fun.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I'm excited to get into this. Hey there, guys, and welcome back to Walsh Wednesday. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, and we got a great episode for you guys today. I'm really excited to be sitting down with these musicians. Not only are they putting out their debut album, collaborating together, they also have decades worth of incredible time in the music industry, working with some of my favorite artists and probably some of your favorite artists as well. So with us today, we have the synth pop collaboration duo of Flight to London. They are going to be debuting their first album. It's going to be Instructions for Losing Control. Great name, by the way. That's coming out on November 21st. Their singles, No One's Forgiven, out September 19th, so that's out already. As of recording this, is about to come out. Walls will be their second single, but you've probably heard of some of the other stuff they've been with. I have here that Jimmy's worked with Goo Goo Dolls, New Radicals, Weezer, Avril Lavigne, Gwen Stefani, Paul Stanley, Cher, and so many more. Rob, who's laughing over here, and I can see blushing already, Dave Stewart, Gin Blossoms, Sabrina Carpenter, and has also worked on soundtracks to movies you probably heard of, Van Wilder, Showgirls, Late Bloomer, and so much more. We have so much to get into on this episode of Walsh Wednesday. We could do like a Walsh week with how much we could talk about. Let's finally introduce these guys. We got Jimmy and Rob. Jimmy, Rob, how are you?
Hello.
Fantastic. Great. Nice to see you. By the way, thank you for the enthusiastic intro. Always, always great to
My
get
kind of
that.
guy.
Appreciate
Hey, y'all are the ones living it. I'm just like reading off cues. They're like, but you guys are the ones that are actually out there and doing it and making it happen. So I definitely want to get more into your past and what led you up to this moment. But before we do, the main album, the main reason we're here today, Instructions for Losing Control, out November 21st. What is the reason that you guys came together after years in the music industry to make this album? What can people expect out of this album?
Well, Jim and I have been, we've known each other for, God, I don't know, maybe 25 years. Lived in LA together after going to Berklee College of Music together.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. And about 2010, we kind of reconnected and realized that we both were kind of had this, still had the same kind of mentality for music and what we wanted to do, and they had the same drive. So we started writing for people and producing for artists, and it just kept going and kept going and kept going. 15 years later into that, we've always talked about, man, we should do something for us because we're so busy writing for other people. We should do something for us. We should do something for us. And it never gets around it. Life gets in the way. Projects get in the way. We had just finished this really great record up, writing for this really great record of this band called Mama Said out of Napa, the Napa area. And Jim and I got up there. We were there for 3 days and wrote 10 songs. And we were just on a roll. It was so much fun. And we were just going at it and driving back a little numb to the airport. We both just looked at each other and said, okay, it's time. It's time. And so, a couple of conversations happened. Like, what do we want to do? How do we want to do it? What kind of sound do we want to, go for? And we just finally we set up a flight for me to come out there. We sat down for 3 days and we just started grinding. So that's how it
Very
happened.
cool. Jimmy, you have anything you want to add onto that?
Yeah, I mean that's basically it. One of the things that when you write and produce records for other people, everyone has an opinion, right? And even if you're because when you're trying to write for someone else, it's their vision, right? I mean, you're trying to support their vision. And sometimes the songwriting, the lyrical depth or the types of things they want to write about maybe aren't necessarily the things that are in your soul that something is nagging at you. If you're someone who writes all the time or has a lot of ideas like Robin and I both do, there are always these songs in there. And sometimes we get to get those juices out and inspired with other people that we work with. But sometimes, but most of the time you're supporting someone else's artistic vision.
Yeah.
And so I think it had been long enough. Rob was a solo artist for years. I pursued that many, many years ago, but I'd kind of given up that for a long time. But we kind of, it was weird. The timing was just correct. And we just said, look, I think we're both ready to write some things that we can't write with other people or for other people. Obviously I'm a father now and we've lived a lot in the last 20 years since being out in LA and a lot more life experience and different points of view. That's what we always talk about, being an artist, the difference between being, maybe just a great singer or an artist really has a point of view. I think for myself, I'm speaking for myself, that it took me a while to kind of just for that to come back up to something that was a priority for me. And what was great was the collaboration is just because most artists we doubt ourselves when we're writing, and you always have this little guy on your shoulder like, is that any good? But when for me, I love the collaboration, especially when you have someone that you respect their musical opinion and their where they're coming from. If you work on something together and you have an idea, and then I say, I'm thinking to myself, I think this is pretty good. And then if Rob goes, yeah, man, this is something, then you kind of it really just keeps the ball rolling.
Yeah.
So that was
And it
what was
keeps you in the
exciting
lane
for
too,
us.
doesn't it? It
Yeah.
keeps you in a lane.
Yeah.
This album is very specific in a specific type of sound. So when we sat down, we go, okay, let's find three or four or five records that we really want this to be centered around. Not that we wanted to write the same type of songs, but those were kind of our muses, kind of floating around
Yeah.
the air as we're writing. And for the first time, we put ourselves in a bit of a box, which was actually very creative. Instead of you'd think that being like, oh no, it has to be completely overflow. Sometimes you need those walls around you to say, nope, you can't do that, you can't do that. And it actually creates options for you. So we would sit there and we would write this great little idea, and we'd always look at each other and kind of go, okay, does that sound like the albums that we are trying to stay in the vein of? And it helped us because if we didn't, one song would sound like this, one song would sound like that. So we really stuck to, yeah.
I mean, there's always going to be a couple outliers, but I always say, people talk about music production and it's just making decisions. That's really what music production
Absolutely.
is. You just have to make decisions. And, with what we have available to us, technology wise and sound wise, it can get overwhelming. At least it does for me. So
I agree.
When you have 8 million plugins and 8 million sounds to choose from and samples, and we're going to use live drums, are we going to use program drums, what kind of program drums, are we going to, you know, are we going to do this or that, having those kind of guardrails, if you will, was the way we wanted to approach it. Because I also thought, we both thought, look, we both have lives outside of this. Is obviously a project that was just born out of something that we needed for our soul, but we don't have unlimited time. And so we figured, doing this enough for other artists, we thought, okay, we have to do this fast, you know, kind of quickly. We didn't want it to take 2 years to make the first, you know, batch of songs. So that's what we did.
That's awesome. I think that's great. What you guys were saying about kind of limiting it down to this narrow vision of, hey, these are the kind of records that we want. I've said this for a few years now. Limitation births imagination. It allows you to create all these different things that you probably wouldn't have been able to do, because the more limits you have, it's like you have to find new ways around it. It's like, all right, I can't do this, but this allows me to come up with this. You probably wouldn't have come up with it if you didn't have that limitation. I think that's awesome. Yeah. You mentioned coming together with certain, like, five records or whatever. I don't know if it was actually five records or if you're just kind of generalizing. No, but if you could tell me, though, what were some of the records that really inspired you guys? I kind of get some vibes of, like, some Tears for Fears. I hear some, like, Genesis. I hear some stuff along those lines. What were the things that inspired you out of this? I got to say, I do enjoy synth pop. I really do. So this was fun to dive into.
I think, you know, when I think of synth pop, sometimes people think of synth pop as a very light kind of melody only, but everything else is kind of small and light. We actually did just the opposite. The albums that we were listening to were Tears for Fears, The Hurting, Tears for Fears, Songs from the Big Chair. I was listening to a ton of Peter Gabriel's Security and So. And then we were talking about a lot of Phil Collins kind of.
Howard Jones kind of creeps in there.
Yeah, and then there's this band that Jim and I absolutely love called Skritti Politti. A lot of people don't know them. They're from the 80s. I consider it the greatest programmed album from the 80s, the best production with synthesizers and stuff like that that there was. So we use that, but the melodies are so amazing in it as well. Those were like really the main, you know, five or six albums that we said, this is what we want to do. And we want to give it some gravity, some weight, some depth, some darkness, for lack of a better term, you know?
So it was fun too, to kind of go back, because, you know, when you think of those albums, they're done so well, they almost seem simple, but they're not simple. I mean, there's nothing simple about any of those records. The care and the detail that went into those albums is something that, you know, as a music consumer, and when I, especially listening with headphones, we love those records so much. And all these small little details of, you know, things coming in this right ear or left ear or reverbs and stuff, when you start to try to analyze it, or at least emulate it, it was pretty tough. But I think then, you know, we also did something where at this point we know our limitations, right? So I'm a guitarist as well, but Rob plays guitar and bass. But we brought in some help. I mean, we brought in a bass player named John Button, who plays for The Who. He's one of my oldest friends, and he's one of the best bass players in the world. We brought him in to play on a bunch of tracks. There's a guitarist named David LaVita, who brought an amazing texture to this record. And he really kind of modernized it in a lot of ways. My other great friend, Steve Feckett, he played an amazing solo. But so we knew what we could do, and we did the foundations, 90% of it. Rob and I are sitting in this room here. But then we kind of reached out. We reached out Rami Jaffe from Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
So, you know, all these different people, and Charlene, we got an amazing backing singer to kind of feature on some stuff. So we knew at a certain point, we thought, okay, I think we need to, you know, get some heavy hitters in here to kind of just elevate it. And that was what was great too, is because those people aren't listening to the same five albums that we're listening to.
Yep.
So they're bringing their own thing to it. And all of those pieces kind of lifted it to a place that we really didn't expect.
I think that's great. Oh, go ahead, Rob.
No,
sorry.
No, go ahead. Well, We talked to Dave Gamson, who did those tracks from Skritti Politti, and said, hey, we want you to produce this. And the more he talked to us, he goes, you guys already have it. You have to do this yourself. You can't ask somebody. But, you know, when you're knee deep in it, like we were, sometimes you need somebody, you know, producer. That's why people should bring in producers. We needed some other outside voices to come in and kind of give it some different colors. So it was awesome.
It sounds like a phenomenal collaboration, not only with just you two in the room, but when you brought all your friends in, and also you said that producer as well. That's cool that you're able to reach out to him. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I always think of when I'm, especially when I'm recording with other people, like I bring in those people because I trust their styles, and oh, yeah. I know that they can bring in something that I can't do on my own. It's right. like, yeah. as you said, they're not listening to those five records that you are. They're coming in with their influences, mm-hmm. and that's only just going to broaden the sound in a way that just you two alone couldn't. I think that is so, so cool. I've listened to the full album already. I was given, good. I was given the press clearance for it.
Yes.
I won't give too much away. I really enjoy the singles, and we'll talk about those in a second. I also like the ones that aren't the singles. Particularly, I really like Silence, Great Escape, and Secondhand Smoke. Those are the songs yeah. that like really spoke wow. to me, whether wow. musically or lyrically. Yeah. In Silence, just in the chorus, scream in the silence. Oh, that is a word painting all in itself, mm-hmm. just that line.
Yeah.
Oh my God, so, so good. I could be here forever just analyzing lyrics with you guys, but let's talk about the first single, No yeah. One's Forgiven. You're talking about how synth pop is often seen as simple and light. Mm-hmm. Holy cow, No One's Forgiven is far from light. It is a deep and heavy song, musically, productionally, and lyrically. So mm-hmm. could you guys go into where No One's Forgiven came from and what's the message you're trying to get out of it?
I'll take this one. No, you know, from a lyrical perspective, you know, the guys in Tears for Fears had a lot of influence on me, especially because there's a lot of psychology involved mm-hmm. in their lyrics. And they were talking about, especially on The Hurting, it's a darker mm-hmm. record. There's a lot of introspection. There's a lot of self-awareness and kind of looking at the world from this other point of view. And for someone like myself, I've been in and out of therapy for years, and you know, it's very healthy. You know, it's mm-hmm. helpful to learn about yourself and to kind of you know, have an extra opinion on that. Obviously, that was a big part of, especially on songs like Secondhand Smoke, Scream in Silence, mm-hmm. those types of things. For No One's Forgiven, that obviously also we're talking about our just general frustration in the world that we're living in right now, in terms of, you know, truthfulness and honesty, authenticity, obviously things that are going on politically. That was something that, you know, those are the types of songs, and I'm most proud of those, because when a 19-year-old girl comes in and wants us to produce some songs, that's not the song that we're going to be writing for her. She doesn't want to talk about, first of all, they're not interested in it, yeah. you know, and those types of things. But to us, I think, you know, especially we've been around the sun a few times, that was important, because, and that song in particularly, lyrically talking about all these things that are just hard for us on a day-to-day basis to go through, you know, with the media, we're just getting bombarded yeah. and, you know, people are bending the truth and all that kind of stuff. So that was important to us, and I appreciate you kind of, you know, understanding. We got a great review. One of the first reviews we got was a really in-depth review. I think it was Electro Zombies, or mm-hmm. no, it was a different one. Laurel.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a woman. Yeah, I forget exactly.
Laura, she
Laurel and something. Yeah. She really went line by line and kind of got what we were saying there, which was because, you know, some people don't even listen to lyrics. You know, they just sing along.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I think something else we did for the album was that we went out of our way to write lyrics that can be looked at in a lot of different directions.
Yeah.
Instead of being so, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, we were going from introspection to societal, like us as people, us together. Or, you know, so it was kind of such a huge difference between how I'm feeling, how I'm dealing with something, or all of us together. And we tried to keep our lyrics as, I don't want to use the word vague, because they're not vague.
Open-ended.
Come up to us. Yeah.
Yeah, open-ended is a great way to look at it.
People come up to
yeah.
us and say, that one line in that one song really hit me because it thought, you know, they would say what they thought it meant. And that's what I think true art is. It should be interpreted. It has to be interpreted. The best art is interpreted. So we tried to keep these lyrics as open-ended as possible, so people can make their own minds up what it's about. I've had other people come up to me and say just the opposite of like, this song's about blah, blah, blah. I said, no, it actually is. So I think that's a good mark on a good song in my mind.
Absolutely. Coming from my perspective of it, listening to a song like No One's Forgiven, you know, as an entertainment journalist who has worked with a number of publications over the years and now going solo and seeing the media landscape, just listening to it, listening to those lyrics, I really felt a lot of the frustration that I feel and that I communicate a lot, where I'm worried about the world ahead and the way that things have been going when it comes to things about the media literacy, about truthfulness, about just basic human morality, things along those lines. So I felt
right there with you.
I felt connected in that way. Maybe not in the same sense that you guys were expressing it or you originally meant, but I felt like we had that shared connection listening to that song.
That's wonderful.
That's great. That's a great
compliment.
That's
what we're doing this for. You know, you can get those kind of conversations, and then you can get a conversation like my wife that just goes, sound like Duran Duran. Okay, that's fine too. That's great. You know, that's fine too. You know, if you just want to enjoy it, that's good. That's what all of that intellectual pop of the Peter Gabriels of the world doing, you know, Sledgehammer or In Your Eyes, you can enjoy that at that surface level, or you can dig in deep. That's why I keep listening to those albums.
Oh, just to touch on that, because it's, I find it humorous, you know, our wives, you know, they kind of from afar, they're kind of outside the room, and we're in here kind of doing this stuff. And, you know, it's, my wife's similar, like, she, you know, she'll hear it and her comments won't really be about a specific lyric or this or that, but, And sometimes it used to, when we first started the project, I was a little bit irked by it. But then I remembered, like, those records that Rob and I love, The Hurting and The Scritty Play, like, that's not her thing. So, and that's not why we made it. We didn't make it, you know, we made it for, because we missed records like that. Those are the records that we love so much. Mm-hmm. So we thought, okay, well, if we can make something and have it be in, you know, make us feel the way that those records make us feel, that's what we're going to do. So it really wasn't meant for them. Of course, we want everyone to like it, but, you know, it's going to be, it's a little bit of a niche, you know?
Yeah, I hear you. It's funny whenever I'm like playing stuff to my girlfriend or stuff that she listens to and whatnot, what connects with her, what doesn't. There was a song on the very first album that I put out that I barely remembered, and she found it and she loved it. And I'm like, oh, wow, you like this song? Wow, that's cool. And then there's another one like off the most recent EP that I put out where I would have swore that there are like three other songs that she would have loved first. No, it's a song about me literally having a mental breakdown that she absolutely loves.
And it's so, did you find that to be medicinal for you when you were writing those?
A little bit, yeah. When writing, 100%. Yeah. It's 100% a medicinal thing. It's very cathartic. It's very therapeutic. You know, music has always been the main way that I've been able to express myself when I haven't learned the maturity or the right vocabulary to express it in a normal conversation. You know, before I had that maturity and awareness of myself, I always had music. And that's just how I've always gone. And Jimmy, you talked about therapy. You know, I've been doing therapy for a few years. I started after I started after the passing of a friend of mine. And it's been great. And I'm still so happy to be in it. And it helps break things down. It breaks down the walls within myself. And I said that intentionally because I want to talk about the next single now. Let's talk about
Walls, nice segue.
Second single.
Nice.
Thank you.
He's good. This one's good. This one's good.
Yeah. So tell me about Walls, the second single off the album.
Well, it's the second single, but it's the first song off the album, actually. Yep. I think we kind of did a great balance in this song. It's a little funky. It's a little dancey, but it's also still got a little depth and weight to it as well. We had Charlene come on and sing it. I'd worked with her for years in LA.
Background vocals were sick.
Yeah.
They sounded
and
good.
She's a monster. She's first call. She's the person, like, when Mariah Carey needed somebody, that's who she calls. And she came over and just absolutely crushed it. And she also... was it the one you said you liked, Great Escape?
Great Escape.
Yes. As well.
Yep. I was about to say,
I love Walls because I think it's a perfect combination of all the things that made us want to do this. The lyrical idea is really about the tearing down of walls just to build them up again. The whole circular motion of humanity about how we destroy and then we rebuild, but it can be used. You know, I've had other people tell me what it means to them, but I think that's kind of where it kind of came from. But yeah, we love it. And all the synth stuff and all the great bass parts.
Yeah, awesome. That was a fun one in the sense that when we first wrote it, I wasn't 1,000% on it. I think Rob saw more of the potential, but then that was one that kind of helped us pave the way, because when we started getting into the weeds on the synths and adding, these arpeggios and kind of, I don't know, maybe self-indulgent, you know, musical sections, which we had talked about, because that's some of the stuff that's missing in today's music. And I mean, we're not saying we're reinventing the wheel, but, you know, very few songs have elevated musical sections just for the sake of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, we missed that. Something with a little more, you know, something that's not necessarily programmed so easily, or something that takes a little bit more time to kind of go through key changes, you know, and things like that. So once we started going down that road and seeing the potential of what that song could do, I got really into it. And it's one of my favorites now, because I mean, it really does represent so much of what we love about music. You know, the grooves, the production, which is a little bit of Arif Mardin in there, who used to produce Chaka Khan and you know, and stuff like that. So that's, I'm excited for that one to come out and for people to hear that. And, you know, it's probably the most, I don't want to say obvious kind of bigger chorus on the record, but it's fun.
It is a fun song. I enjoyed listening to it. I thought it was great. And it's interesting how, you know, this is a song about breaking down walls. And Jimmy, it seemed like the song, the process, broke down walls within yourself, the apprehension of making it. It's really funny when you have a piece of music where you're like, I don't know if this is going to go anywhere. And then it becomes like one of your favorite things.
Yeah.
On my previous full record, there was a song that I just kind of threw it in there. I didn't like it when I did it acoustically, but like when the band came together, it was like, holy cow, this is by far one of my favorite songs now. Yeah, and it still is. It does.
It kind of changes live. Life changes a whole song. You know, you it might be the song you're like, yeah, I don't know. And all of a sudden everybody plays it. And it's like, oh, this is the one, you know, this is the last song on the album. I mean, on the show, you know?
Yep. It is so, so good. And like the song I'm referring to, it's like this kind of like really sexy little numbers, like smooth and fun. And like, I told everybody, it was like, guys, if this song doesn't sound like sex, like we failed. And like, we all worked on it. Everybody's like, all right, we're in on this. And it's just so funky and groovy. And I was so happy how that came out. But yeah, no, originally in that process, I'm like, do I even include it on the album? I don't know if it works.
How many times have we all heard artists say, I wasn't even put that song in the album, and it was their biggest hit.
Right.
It's so funny when you're so close to it. Sometimes you can't, you know, you just can't tell what's good or bad. You just have to keep moving. But, I mean, the last song on the album, the last song to be picked for the album actually was Silence. So, and I just love that song. Everyone that I talk to just loves that. It's a pretty heavy tune.
It might need to be a third single or somewhere down the line.
Maybe. We'll see.
I love the bridge of that song.
Oh
actually,
my gosh! Yeah,
you know, musically, because I, you know, we always talk. For years, I would talk about like the feeling, you know, you get a feeling from a song. And, you know, when I'm producing stuff or when we started this project, it was like, okay, well, we have to have some moments where we create that. And how do you create that? And, you know, I don't know, but I think we did in the bridge of that song, at least when I hear it now, the pull of it and, you know, the tensions and, you know, whatever we did there sonically, that's one that I, when it comes to the bridge, I really go, oh yeah, I think we got
and
it there.
And Jim, when we come out of that instrumental part, it's Jim and I singing harmonies together. And that is very us. That is very Jim and I sitting in that exact room he's in right now, singing harmonies together. So I always love that. I look forward to it live. I look forward to singing that part with Jim live.
That's going to be exciting. And once you get those live shows out, please let me know, especially if you're ever on the East Coast. Love to see you guys. That would be phenomenal. And pause. We're going to take a quick break from our interviews to hear from our sponsors. First up, we got our friend Andrew O'Grady from MHA of Dutchess County.
Adversity and stress. How do you cope? I'm dealing with a voice issue right now, my own adversity and stress. So let's use AI Andy for the rest of this message. Take it away, AI Andy.
This is Andrew O'Grady, CEO at MHA of Dutchess County. We all move on a scale of mental wellness. It can shift minute by minute, hour by hour, based on what we face. What happens when it piles on? How do you cope? Do you turn to the bottle or vape? Do you medicate with pills not prescribed for that purpose? Do you become short-tempered and argue with others? Are you quick to road rage? These are self-defeating and negative reactions, and they're unhealthy and can lead to self-inflicted further stress. There's no shame in seeking to improve you by engaging in self-care with a therapist. If you do not know where to start, talk to your primary care physician. You can always contact Mental Health America of Dutchess County at 845-473-2500, and if we don't have a specific program to help you, we will help guide you to one.
Thanks, AI Andy. You sound pretty good.
Thanks, Andrew and AI Andy. Next, we have a message from our friend Jeff Feldman from Feldman, Kleiman, Collins, and Sape LLP, attorneys at law.
Hi, I'm Jeff Feldman. In 1986, when Paul Kleiman and I started our practice, our goal was to create a law firm where you could meet with an attorney and feel confident that that attorney would be with you every step of the way. Today, the firm has been successfully trying cases at all levels of state and federal courts throughout the Hudson Valley and Capital District. We have been selected as one of the best personal injury and medical malpractice defense law firms by U.S. News and World Report every year since 2009. For all of those years, we were the only firm chosen in any litigation specialty between Albany and White Plains. Your case is important to us. Giving you the time and personal attention you deserve has always been the hallmark of success. Initial consultations are free of charge and always with an attorney.
A message from Dutchess Beer Distributors. From now to the end of November, Dutchess Beer Distributors presents Football Face-Off. Come on out to your favorite Hudson Valley bars and restaurants where you can win free Bud Light and neutral seltzers, along with other awesome prizes. Try your hand at one of their three games: football toss, beer can cornhole, or flick a field goal. You can check out the events calendar to see where Dutchess Beer Distributors will be next in the description of this episode.
Walsh Wednesday wants to give a big thank you to Prime Storage. It's the end of the year, and you may need to free up space for guests for the holidays, store seasonal decorations, secure valuables, and maybe even hide the presents. A temporary storage unit can help declutter a home, protect fragile items during a busy period, and provide a convenient way to organize and transition belongings before, during, and after the festive season. Whatever the reason, Prime Storage makes storage simple through seamless service, flexible rental options, and facilities conveniently located throughout the United States and Canada. By using our link in the description of this episode, you will get one free month of storage, plus you'll save 15% on rental rates. Make the holiday season simpler and store with Prime Storage. Up next, we have our friend Philomena Finelli from Impact PR and Communications.
Thanks, Connor. I'm Philomena Finelli, CEO of Impact PR and Communications and a media maven, which is a fancy way of saying that my team and I help companies get in the news, transform leaders into thought leaders, and cut through the clutter with messaging that matters. And we do it all with a smile. Our agency was named the Woman-Owned Small Business of the Year for 2024 by the Metro New York District Office of the U.S. Small Business Administration, and we received the Gold Stevie Award for Women-Run Workplace of the Year, which is an international recognition. But it's not about the awards, it's about the personal interactions. We at Impact PR and Communications pride ourselves on crafting meaningful, results-driven public relations campaigns that are tailored to meet and exceed our clients' goals. If you want to learn more and talk to my team and I, visit PRwithimpact.com and let us know that you found out about us from Walsh Wednesday.
Thanks for listening, guys. It's time to get back to the show and play. This episode of Walsh Wednesday is brought to you by Impact PR and Communications, MHA of Dutchess County, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Day Rock, Lockset Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, Dutchess Beer Distributors, Feldman, Kleiman, Collins, and Sape LLP, Attorneys at Law, Vivash Med Spa and the Hudson Valley Ketamine Lounge, Prime Storage, and Walsh Valuation. Guys, Absolutely. Thank you so much for talking about this album. I'm curious now. I want to talk about the careers that you guys have had. We could sit here forever. This could pretty much be a whole episode in and of itself. But one thing that I've been very lucky to do in my job is I've met a lot of my personal heroes. I've been really lucky where it's like there were moments where I kind of sat there and was like, I can't believe I'm meeting the people that inspired me to do what I do. For instance, when I was super young, one of the first songs that I like really, really loved and could tell you was my favorite song, Superman, It's Not Easy by Five for Fighting. My dad would like rock me to sleep to it, stuff like that.
Yeah.
20 years later, I'm hanging out with them backstage for a radio interview that I'm doing. And now we're actually friends, which is crazy to me. And I have a number of other stories like that. But I want to hear from you guys. What was a moment where you felt either like starstruck or felt like super proud to meet or work with somebody?
This is like a 9-hour conversation.
I know. This is a weighted question.
I got an opportunity. I was on this television show called Rockstar in Excess.
Yes.
Which was, you know, I was in the house band on that. And then there was another season after that where they made a super band with Tommy Lee and Jason Newsted and Gilby Clark, but that was called Rockstar Supernova. But from that band, I had gotten a phone call from the TV show, from Paul Stanley, from Kiss, you know? And so, you know, it was through a friend. And he said, "Hey, I'm doing a solo album." You know, he hadn't done a solo album really ever. You know, back in the 70s, each member of Kiss had their own album, you know, like with where each one was on the cover. And that was wasn't a solo album, but they kind of each had their own album. But he said, "Well, I haven't done a solo album in 30 years or whatever it was." And he asked me if I would play guitar for him and the other guys in the house band. And that was a really interesting and surreal experience, because I think I was Ace Frehley for Halloween, you know, when I was 7 years old. And I remember playing those Kiss records and kind of being, it wasn't even so much musically, it was just kind of the whole thing, you know, with the face painting and the fire breathing and all the stuff. And as a kid, it was a very interesting thing to be a fan of when I was, you know, 7, 8 years old or whatever. And then to get to be able to play, you know, Rock and Roll All Night and these songs with the guy, that was a really interesting experience to kind of work with him. He was definitely someone that when I was a young, I mean, it was even before I was really playing music seriously, I was just consuming music. I was a fan of Kiss. So that was an interesting one. And then just really quickly, later on, I did get to meet John Bon Jovi. I had met him actually once or twice, but he is someone who, when I growing up in Jersey, South Jersey, when I was in my real formative musical years, I played a lot of Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
I mean, in high school, I had a bunch of bands and we weren't a Bon Jovi tribute band, but if we played 10 songs, probably 5 were Bon Jovi songs. So, you know, I got very close to being in Bon Jovi, like to be one of the side guys, you know, playing guitar and keyboards and singing backgrounds. It's a long, long story, but I got really close. I ended up going to his house and meeting him and David Bryan, the keyboard player.
Yes.
It was just a crazy, surreal experience because, I mean, I had his poster on my wall, when I was a kid, and I got an Ovation acoustic because of him and, you know, all these types of things. So I've been fortunate in that way to meet a few of these guys. And then the ones who I haven't met, I kind of don't want to meet, to be honest with you.
That's how I feel too.
Like, that's fair.
You know, like, you know, I mean, Phil Collins, I mean, I actually did meet him for about a half a second. It's funny because I forgot it. Brad was with me. We have a mutual friend, Brad's Fernquist, who's a guitar player in the Goo Goo Dolls with me. But we met him backstage, I mean, and at some television performance, but it was very quick. And it was probably a, "Hey, how you doing?" And then that was kind of it. So it wasn't really a conversation, but you know, I don't know. Maybe it's better to not meet some of them.
Agreed.
Some people, yes, absolutely. Rob, I want to hear from you in a second, but Jimmy, I just want to say, based on what you were saying, awesome about Paul Stanley. That is such a cool thing. When it comes to Bon Jovi, as somebody growing up in the Northeast, you know, New York rather than New Jersey, but still, Bon Jovi is inescapable. Actually, right. We did It's My Life for a talent show back in school. Big fan of, like, of course, Slippery When Wet, a classic, but like the Crush Tour album. And I remember listening to the Have a Nice Day album over and over and over again. So I'm with you on that. And then, the fact that you're currently working with the Goo Goo Dolls, I'm a huge Goo Goo Dolls fan. I saw your name in the credits of the Christmas album in particular. My dad and I put on that Christmas record every year since. So.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, that record has a special place in my heart and always will, because my daughter sings on the album. So I don't know if you recall.
Go for it.
So the song Better Days, which is one of their bigger songs, my daughter Sydney sings the lead on the Christmas album.
That's her?
That's my daughter. Yeah. So whoa. And I produced that record with John and Brad. So that was you know, that's something that I'll always have, and we as a family will always have. And it's actually a cute little story. I'll make it really succinct, but we were working on the Christmas album, and you know, Better Days was originally written as a Christmas song. And you know, the first line is, you asked me what I want this year. And what I didn't realize was that when they were about to put it out, Hurricane Katrina came. And then for some reason, that song came out early and was attached to kind of helping that effort to kind of bring, you know, people together, you know, for better days. And it kind of took on a weird life of its own, but it was always meant to be a Christmas song. And John wanted to do a different interpretation of it. And at one point, I think he had mentioned, you know, maybe having a girl sing, you know, a young person sing it or something. But we were working on it in the studio, and we were, you know, it's hard to recreate something that's really, really great. That song is amazing, and the production's amazing. And we were having a difficult time kind of reimagining it. I took the tracks home to my home studio. My daughter, who's has incredible talent, I think she was 6 or 5 or 6. I said to Sydney, try to sing this. She sang it like twice. And so the next day I came into the studio and we were kind of still struggling. And I said, hey man, just listen to this. And I put it on. And he, John loved it. He freaked out and he was like, that's it. That's it. I'm not singing it. He's like, you know, it was almost like Larry David. It was like, that's it. We're done. He's like, she's singing it. And it was, and so I think I went back and had her punch 2 lines maybe, but it, most of it was like a one take, and it's, you know, it's very honest. And that's what John wanted. And to his credit, you know, obviously I'm biased because it's my daughter, but there's something so beautiful about such an innocent voice singing those lyrics. Yeah. And so I always joke because, you know, I said to her, you know, I've been waiting my whole life to get my voice on a major label album and you have it at 7, you know, and she's like the lead singer on a Warner Brothers album at 7 years old.
Oh, by the way, you know, Jim, she's going to be in the new Walls video.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
So, we're working on a video. She's an amazing dancer and we taped her doing a dance routine and we're going to try to work with AI. And we have a buddy who's working on that record or on the video production. So hopefully we'll be able to get that out, you know, pretty quick.
Very excited on that. Going to be very happy to check that out. Thank you for sharing that story. That is so heartwarming. I love that. Thank you so much. Yeah. Rob, I apologize. We've been holding off on you. I would love to hear the moments that you felt starstruck or really felt really impactful to you.
Well, I mean, I kind of feel the same as Jim with the whole idea. Like my biggest triad of my fandom as a child was Rush, The Police, and U2. I've never met any of them. Thank God. I don't want to do it. You know, it's like Todd Rundgren was a huge part of my life too, and I actually got to play live with him for a show.
Oh, really?
That was really cool. But I'll stick with Bon Jovi. I got a good Bon Jovi story. So I worked on the on his solo album,
Destination Unknown.
Yes, Destination Unknown.
Oh, that one. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was working with Dave Stewart. And kind of just there doing utility stuff, whatever needed to be done. And first of all, John shows up. I'm in the studio. There's a big SSL console. You know, I know that thing inside and out. But I was getting it ready and something wasn't right. Something wasn't working. And I could be, here comes John. I'm like, oh, my God, this is not going to be good. He walks in and he goes, I'm just going to go, dude. And I'm about to start sweating, right? I'm like, the console's not working. And he's like, oh, no problem. Just take your time, man. No problem. So I'm sitting there for hours trying to figure out what's going on with the SSL. Somebody pushed some button. I couldn't figure out what it was. And he sat there so understanding and so kind and so nice. I think you could tell I was stressing out. Finally got it working. And they were starting to work on this song that he, you know, they brought in. And he had a couple of parts to it already on a tape. So he goes, this song needs an acoustic guitar. And you know, I thought, okay, yeah, I know Bon Jovi is. He sold a lot of albums. Do I think he's like the biggest? I mean, he's not my, you know, Todd Rundgren or something like that, but I'm blown away that he's here. So he goes, I'm thinking, who's playing the guitar part? Whatever. And he goes, oh, no, I'll do it. He goes in, acoustic guitar, one take, perfect, top to bottom. And you don't see that very often. It's, you know, people are always punching and shit. And so he does it in one take. And I'm like, okay, wait a second. And then he's like, and then he does some tambourine or something like that, one take, all the way through, perfect. I'm like, okay, now I know why this guy sold 150 million records. So then they get to the chorus and Dave says to him, you know what? I'm not really hot on this chorus. I think you could probably do a better chorus. Now, being a songwriter and at that age time of my life, it's like if somebody said that to me, rewrite the chorus, I'd be just like, throw it out. Let's just write a new song because maybe out of arrogance or whatever, I'm like, I can't tear apart my song, especially the chorus, right? And he's like, really? He goes, okay, you guys go have lunch. We go have lunch. And come back, he'd completely rewritten the chorus, completely rewrote the lyrics, and it was 10 times better than it was before.
Wow.
And I was like, I learned a lot from him that day going, because he could have said, you know what, I've sold 150 million records, you know what you're talking about. And he instead was like, okay, let's see what we can do here. And that taught
Yeah.
me so much about being able to edit your music and not holding on to it so tight. So that was a big day for me. To this day, I still think about whenever Jim and I are doing something, we're like, oh, this isn't working. Or I think, wait a second, let's dissect it and figure out what is there a better option. So,
Wow, that's
yeah.
really, really cool. That's as somebody who, I've beat myself up over music and whatnot and everything, that is fantastic and the perfect story I think any musician or any so-called perfectionist needs to hear at times. Thank you for telling that story. That
Yeah,
really is a
absolutely.
tremendous story. The last thing I just want to say off of what you're saying, Todd Rundgren, love his stuff too. His work producing Bat Outta Hell with Meatloaf, chef's kiss.
Absolutely brilliant.
One of my
He's
favorite
just,
albums of all time.
I grew up in a small town, so there weren't a lot of people around, and I kind of gravitated towards the guys that could play a little bit of everything, because if I needed a keyboard part, there was nobody around to do it for me, so I had to figure it out. So he became a huge part of my and he was another intellectual pop guy, so I'm sure he's kind of woven into the fabric of this record as well, subconsciously.
Yeah, absolutely. That's just the thing. Everything that we work on, it bleeds into what we're working on, whether we mean to or not. And I think that's great. Guys, we only have a few minutes left to this interview because I know that we got to run off, but I want to end on some really fun, quick questions. I mentioned this to you beforehand. I didn't tell you guys what the questions were. I just told you the general idea of it. I love doing this with groups. Who's most likely to? So, since a number of people will be just simply listening to this, please be vocal with your answers as well, along
You
with,
got
pointing either at yourself or,
it.
yeah, you can point, but also just say for me, please, just
No
for
pointing.
the sake of
Got it.
everybody who are listening. I got a few of these questions. They're not too bad. Hopefully, they won't cause any rifts or nothing. But one of the first things that I want to ask, who's most likely to get carried away in a solo or just washed off in the music in general?
Oh, that's definitely Jim. That's definitely Jim. I'm a little more
Maybe.
meticulous when it comes to that. Jim is such a great musician and a great piano player. He can just absolutely just go off in places. And that's what's so cool about writing with him, because we can get stuck in a corner like all writers do. And he's so great sitting there going, okay, well, what if we go to the flat seven augmented blah blah blah. And it's like, so he's got that natural gift. I'm a little more like, let's get it figured out and I'm all over it. Whereas if he and I are playing cover songs, it's a whole different thing. And I become the crooning the crooning singer.
Yeah, probably me. Yeah, that's me.
I love that. All right, next thing. Who's most likely to leave something behind at a show or in the studio to like just lose something or forget it?
Not me. Probably you, Rob.
Nah, I don't know. Maybe my
You've
glasses.
left your glasses a couple times. Yeah. No, but well, 'cause look, I'm gonna have to say you because I was very proud of myself. I just did 42 shows this summer.
Oh,
I was in and out of like 8,000 room hotel rooms and I
yeah.
didn't lose anything.
That's
And my
impressive.
daughter came for like 9, 10 days and she had tons of stuff. We had to remember all of that stuff. So, I mean, I've been pretty damn good about not leaving things behind. So I'm just gonna have to give that to you.
Okay,
Yeah.
I'll take
All
it.
right. That's fair. That's fair. I think that's fun though. Let's see. Who's most likely to stay out late and party after a show?
That's Rob,
Jim, you can take that one, Jim. I'll be over here.
1,000%. I don't, Connor. So, one of the questions that someone asked in our one of our last interviews was something, what would be surprising about me? So, I've never drank in my life,
Oh, good for
and
you.
as a
Nice.
rock and roll musician, that's just a little bit of a surprising thing. So, I've never had alcohol. Like, I've had like 2 sips of alcohol my whole life. So,
Wow.
the answer to that would be Rob. To your question would
Well,
be absolutely
the
Rob.
answer would be Rob and Jim's wife, who we both grew up in
Yeah.
Iowa. She's all every time I come out there, and like when I go out to work, I don't do any of that because we have to sing, and we have to be creative. So that he's actually kind of got me off the sauce a little bit here and there when it comes to like projects. But his wife is wonderful, and she and I are always grabbing a bottle to have some rosé to celebrate the fact that I'm there.
I love that. I love that. That is so much fun. All right, this one's a fun one too, guys. Let's see. Most likely to get recognized out in public.
I don't know. Maybe me, but if
Yeah.
I'm at a show, if we're at a
No.
Goo Goo Dolls show, then yeah.
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 Yeah, we don't, neither of us look like exactly like Brad Pitt or anything like that, you know, where they mistake us, but I'll give
Speak for
that one to
yourself.
Jim.
But like recognized as yourselves. But yeah, that makes sense. Like right after a show. Okay, cool.
But it's pretty rare. Yeah, it's pretty
Gotcha.
rare.
All right. Let's see. Who is most likely to name drop one of the famous artists that you've worked with?
Neither of us.
Neither of you guys, huh?
I mean,
Yeah,
it's.
we try not to, but I it would, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the fact is, like, we've worked with so many people, and it's been a wonderful experience, and we appreciate it when it happens. But at the same time, when you get to a recording studio with artists, they no longer are these famous people for the most part that I've seen when I've been in the studios with people. They become just like you. You're all there to do the exact same thing, and they just kind of. So I don't look at it that way, and I don't. It doesn't matter, to be quite honest, who I've worked with or what I've done. It's more about what we're doing right now, and it's. You know, and being a producer, that happens to most people. You'd be shocked. You talk to producers, like, oh yeah, I did this, 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 and this, but it's not something to really try to impress people with.
That is
The
the
only
best
time, the only,
possible answer I could have gotten. Wow. Go right
the
ahead,
only
Jimmy.
time, the only time I ever did that was a couple times, like when you're on tour. Like we were in, I was in Kuala Lumpur, and they have this building. It's called the Petronas Towers, and it's these two massive. It's in a couple movies, and there's a sky bridge in the middle. And we were only there for one day, and I wanted to go. A bunch of guys in the band. A lot of times people think when you tour you get to do all this stuff, but sometimes you're there for half a day or not even a day, and you're gone. But we were trying to get up and see the towers, go up there, and you can look over the whole city. And we got there, and they had just closed the elevator lift. And I was with Avril Lavigne at the time, and she's a big star. And I said, and we, I was with the guys in the band, and we were kind of bummed. And I said, let me just see what I can do here. And so I went and I said, hey, and there's a big language barrier too, because I didn't know if they spoke, but I was like, I don't know what I said. I said something like, hey, we're here with Avril Lavigne's band. You want some tickets for tonight? Just let us go up in the thing. And we got in. So, sometimes you have to drop the name here and there, because I was only there one day and I've never been back since. And I've got the pictures, and so sometimes you got to do it, man.
That's
That's
funny.
awesome.
That's a good example of doing it. I love that. That's great. All right, I got a couple more for you guys before I'll let you totally go. Who's most likely to forget their own lyrics?
Ooh.
Maybe me.
It might be you, Jim, only because we haven't sang them yet. And you know what I mean? Like, we
Yeah.
got to, I think the first couple of rehearsals, there's going to be lyric sheets in front of
Oh,
both
I
of
need a teleprompter, dude.
us.
I got to get a guy. We need a teleprompter guy.
You might hear me singing two first verses every
It
once in a
happens.
Yeah.
It happens. I've done it myself plenty of times. Oh my God. Funny stuff. All right. I think I might know the answer to this question just by visuals, but who is most likely to buy slash collect the most musical equipment?
His name's Jim McGorman, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, probably me.
Yeah, let's show off the background, Jim.
You gotta
Yeah,
show
I
me,
mean,
show. You
well,
gotta
yeah, I
bend it over.
mean, there's a lot of
Stuffing
gear in
things.
here. Yes,
Yeah.
but
At the beginning of this, when we first got on, we just got the
yep.
D series over there, Moog. That'll be a new fun toy. There's always a new toy when I come out, so.
That's fun. That's fun. I love that. And the very last question here, who's most likely to share this episode of Walsh Wednesday to their fans first?
Both of us.
Both of us. Yeah,
Good
we're both,
answer.
man. Yeah.
Good
Yeah,
answer.
we're all over it.
I had a band that was like, I don't know, probably him. It was like, really? Not all of you guys? Wow. So thank you for that answer. I appreciate that. Guys, Jim, Rob, this has been a phenomenal interview. I would love to keep talking to you guys, picking your brains,
Absolutely.
learning so much more of the industry. I hope we stay in touch,
Yeah, I
but
would love it.
absolutely. So in the meantime, though, of course, people, those listening, check out the album when it comes out November 21st, Instructions for Losing Control. You can listen to No One's Forgiven in Walls right now. This is going to be airing after Walls comes out, by the way, guys.
Oh, perfect. And the band is flight to London.
Flight to London. So you
Right.
can check that all out. We're going to have all the links in the description of this episode, so you won't have to go very far. You won't have to like take a flight to London or something like that in order to find all the links. We got you set.
Nice.
Jim, Rob, thank you guys so much. I'm Connor.
I'm Jim.
And I'm Rob.
And as always, we're glad we get to
Spend some
Spend some
time.
time.
And that's a wrap on this week's episode. Much love to our sponsors this week, Impact PR and Communications, MHA of Dutchess County, Locks That Rock Hair Design, Dutchess Beer Distributors, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta,
the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County, Feldman, Kleiman, Collins, and Sape LLP, Attorneys at Law, Prime Storage, Vivash Med Spa and the Hudson Valley Ketamine Lounge, Walsh Valuation, and Day Rock. Thank you to our Walsh Wednesday All-Stars, all of those who have generously contributed to the Walsh Wednesday 2025 Fund Drive. You can see the list of names on screen or in the description of this episode. And of course, thank you to our Walsh Wednesday Warriors, Jim Robinson, John Newhall, Meg Boyce, and Jenna Hess. These individuals have pledged $100 or more to Walsh Wednesday for 2025, either through the GoFundMe or our Patreon. You can support this channel by becoming a Patreon member with memberships as low as $5 a month. With that, you can get behind-the-scenes content, your name featured in the credits of each episode, and access to the Spend Some Time chat. You can find that and more by scanning the QR code on your screen or by going to the links in the description. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, and I'm glad we get to spend some time.